Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Gift of Grace on the Word 1220. This is Phil Giuliani here on another awesome Sunday night. And this is the Gift of Grace, where we read and teach God's Word, and we proclaim the kingdom and salvation in Jesus the Messiah. So I hope you've all had an awesome week. We have had a very awesome week because we have been celebrating one of the feasts of the Lord, the Feast of Tabernacles, or Sukkot. And we've had an awesome time teaching about Sukkot and in Bible study groups and in Torah study groups and in churches and Messianic synagogue. And it's been just a great week, and especially at One in Messiah on Friday nights. And again, I'd like to remind you, if you live in the Cleveland area, One in Messiah takes place in Parma on Friday nights at 5994 Ridge Road. We start about 6:15, and then there's also a live stream on Facebook, and then later it's on YouTube. But if you want to stop in person, it's a lot more fun, and you can stop in and say hello. So getting to today's program, we've been going through the book of Acts, as you know, for quite some time, and I'm not sure how much longer we're going to do it, but we've gotten to chapter 19. And tonight I want to focus in on the last part of chapter 19. We're not going to do the whole chapter because, like everything else, there's you can't read everything and teach everything, because then the series would go on for many, many months, or many, many years, actually. And today we're going to start actually at verse 23 of chapter 19 of the book of Acts. And it's a very interesting story about what happens to people whose not only their spiritual habits and their spiritual life is threatened, but their economic life is threatened because of a new spirituality. And Paul encounters that at Ephesus. And we don't have time to go through the whole thing to kind of set the stage and do the whole background. So we're going to start with Paul in Ephesus. Now, Ephesus was a very important city in the ancient Greek culture. It was actually in present-day Turkey, which was part of the Greek world. The Turks didn't come to Turkey until, actually the 1400s. Before that, it was Greek. And, the city of Constantinople is there, which is one of the great seats of Christianity. There has been a patriarch in Constantinople since ancient times. It was part of the Greek world. It was the Greek world. And so Ephesus is in present-day Turkey, also was called Anatolia, and it was called Asia Minor. And Ephesus, of course, was a church that Paul was very involved with. He wrote them a letter, the Epistle to the Ephesians. There's some traditional stories that tell us that St. John, when he was caring for Mary, the mother of Jesus, the Virgin Mary, lived in Ephesus for a while with her and then went back to the Holy Land. We don't have any documentation of that. But it's a very strong tradition in that time, in the Greek world and also in the Roman world. So Ephesus was a city that was dedicated to the Greek goddess Artemis. Now, Artemis was the Greek equivalent of the Roman goddess Diana. And if you remember all of your mythology, which, of course, we don't have time to get into all the details, Diana/Artemis was the goddess of the moon and the goddess of the hunt, H-U-N-T. So she was very important, and Ephesus was one of her shrine cities. There was a huge temple to Artemis Diana in Ephesus, and people came from all over the area to make pilgrimages to this huge shrine to the goddess Diana, or Artemis. I'll call her Diana just to keep it simpler. to the goddess Diana. And as we're going to see, this had a huge impact on the local economy. There were many craftsmen involved in making statues and making what we would call souvenirs of the goddess Diana and also of her temple. So that if you came from some surrounding area or you came from Greece proper or you were a Roman who happened to be there for whatever reason, you went to pay your, you know, to do your prayers or whatever devotion you had to the goddess Diana. And of course, you bought some souvenirs to take home. You bought some little statues or some little medals or something with her image on it. And they also made images, beautiful silver work, by the way. Some of it has been recovered. beautiful workmanship done in silver of the temple itself that people would wear or they would keep in their homes. So we're going to start in verse 23. Now we're in the city of Ephesus. And about that time, there arose a great commotion about the way, capital W. Christians at this point were called the people of the way, W-A-Y. For a certain man named Demetrius, a silversmith who made silver shrines of Diana, brought no small profit to the craftsmen. He called them together with workers of similar occupation and said, "Men, you know that we have our prosperity by this trade. Moreover, you see and hear that not only at Ephesus, but throughout almost all Asia, this Paul has persuaded and turned away many people, saying that they are not gods which are made with hands. So not only is this trade of ours in danger of falling into disrepute, but also the temple of the great goddess Diana may be despised and her magnificence destroyed, whom all Asia and the world worship." Now, when they heard this, they were full of wrath and cried out, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." So let's look at this a little bit. So Paul had been in Ephesus for 2 years at this point. You know, Paul didn't go someplace like a modern preacher or evangelist and do a two-hour program and then the next day head off to another city. He stayed 18 months at Corinth. He stayed 2 years in Ephesus. So he had been in Ephesus for 2 years. In the verses before this, he mentioned that he wanted to go back to Jerusalem and then he wanted to go to Rome. So he was making travel plans when it says this great commotion arises. And Paul refers to this commotion when he writes to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 15:32. He talks about how he had to fight the beasts in Ephesus. And some people had debated whether they were going to martyr him with the wild animals or whether he's talking about confronting these people that we're going to talk about in a minute. And it was probably more likely the latter. But he talks about that these people were beasts. And so, as I mentioned, the worship of Diana was big economic boom for these silversmiths. You know, being a silversmith is a very important trade. It's a very skilled trade. You use very fine tools. You have to know how to work with the metal. And when you read, of course, if you've studied Torah, you understand in the book of Exodus that God commanded Moses to make certain tables, altars, vessels, and the ark itself with acacia wood and gold and hammered gold and gold coatings on things and some things made out of solid gold. And these people didn't know how to work with metal because, after all, they had been slaves in Egypt. But God said his spirit would come down on the craftsmen, especially Bezalel, and they made these beautiful things. So metalsmiths were in great demand through the ancient world because they had an amazing craft. And so they made a big profit making these statues of Diana and the temple. And this guy Demetrius represents this trade. It tells us he's a wealthy guy from making Diana stuff. I mean, he's made a lot of Diana souvenirs over the years. Everybody has been buying them, and he's made big money. And so he gets his fellow silversmiths together and says, hey, you know, we're making a great living here. And this guy, Paul, is taking people away from us. He's telling people that these are not gods, these images that we make with our hands. Because if you remember a couple of chapters ago in Athens, Paul told the philosophers at the Areopagus that, you know, God is self-sufficient. He exists in his own self. He's the creator of all things. He doesn't need anything from us. He says the gods that you people make with your hands are not gods at all. And this, of course, got some people upset, and the people in Ephesus got very upset, saying, Paul says that this Diana image I made is not a god at all, not a goddess at all. And so their economic status is impacted. This is going to affect their trade, because as more and more people become believers, as more and more people come to faith in Jesus and understand the God of Israel, there's going to be fewer and fewer people worshiping Diana, and therefore fewer and fewer people buying Diana souvenirs when they go to Ephesus. He says, we got to do something about this, because Paul is causing trouble. You know, the Greek there means that there's a mob of these fellow craftsmen that are involved with this. You know, it's a mob has a negative connotation. It's not just a group of men that are concerned about their trade and they're going to discuss something. They turn into a mob. They're concerned about their worldly situation. And they've seen this happen other places as more people turn to the gospel, and they don't want it to happen at Ephesus. Paul's been telling people all over the Greek world to turn away from worshiping these idols, that these are not gods. These are figures and buildings made with human hands. And God created the universe, sent his son to redeem the world, doesn't need anything from us to exist. And the people in Torah and all through the Tanakh, the Old Testament, are, of course, instructed over and over again to make no images. And making images was strictly forbidden because it would lead to idolatry. And here you go with these people having silver images of Diana and worshiping them. So this guy Demetrius says, you know, we're going to be ruined. But then just to make it sound not just economic, that he's actually in some degree, at some level, also a spiritual guy, he says, oh, then also Diana won't be honored anymore. This is gonna lower the reputation of the goddess. Because after all, we're amazed at this beautiful temple. We're amazed at what an awesome goddess Diana is. And not only Ephesus, but he says all of Asia and all of the world worship her. And this might be lost because of this guy Paul preaching the gospel and telling people that our gods aren't really gods at all, that these are just images that we make. And as more and more people believe in Jesus, the situation's going to get worse. Now, this is the perfect inroad for demonic forces. Because, of course, we don't have time to get into a whole development of this, but maybe we'll do it some other time. There's many references in the scriptures, and there's many references even within the Torah that there's demonic influences that cause all these images that the pagans make as their gods, that these are actually a demonic influence. And so here we have a demonic influence that comes into these men who are of the silver trade and say, we got to do something to stop this guy, Paul. We have to do something to stop the gospel. We have to do something to inhibit what he's doing, or else it's going to be bad for us and it's going to be bad for our goddess. And so this mob of people who's there first talking about their trade. Then they hear Demetrius talk about how the goddess is going to be despised by this, and everybody worships her, and especially this is her city, that they start shouting, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." So they start to kind of chant this. So they stand for their trade, and they stand in support of their religion, so to speak. You know, we look at Diana, Artemis, and all the other gods and goddesses, of course, as cute stories. It's called Greek mythology, Roman mythology. There's Norse mythology. There's Babylonian mythology. There's all these people because, of course, up until the time of Jesus, it was only the Hebrews, only the Israelites, that worshiped the one true God. What set the Israelites apart from all the other world was all the others in the world was Deuteronomy 6:4, which is, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." They believed in the one true God, and that one true God had a covenant with them that he had established, and they were to be his people, and he was their God. So we all understand that. So they were the only people that believed in the one true God. So what we call mythology was all these other people's religion. It's a serious business if you're a Diana worshiper, and some guy comes around and tells you that, well, Diana's not really a goddess at all. You guys just made that all up. And the true God doesn't want all this stuff to be going on, that you're worshiping this false goddess. So the mob gets a little bit worked up, and after they cried, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians," verse 29, "So the whole city was filled with confusion and rushed into the theater with one accord, having seized Gaius and Aristarchus, Macedonians, Paul's travel companions. And when Paul wanted to go into the people, the disciples would not allow him. Then some of the officials of Asia, who were his friends, sent to him pleading that he would not venture into the theater. Some therefore cried one thing and some another, for the assembly was confused, and most of them did not know why they had come together. And they drew Alexander out of the multitude, and the Jews putting him forward. And Alexander motioned with his hands and wanted to make his defense. But when they found out he was a Jew, all with one voice cried out for 2 hours, 'Great is Diana of the Ephesians.' And when the city clerk had quieted the crowd, he said, 'Men of Ephesus, what man is there who does not know that the city of the Ephesians is the temple guardian of the great goddess Diana and of the image which fell down from Zeus? Therefore, since these things cannot be denied, you ought to be quiet and do nothing rashly. For you have brought these men here who are neither robbers of temples nor blasphemers of your goddess.'" What's happening here? Now, this mob grabs two guys that were traveling with Paul, and they take them to the theater. Now, we don't know what kind of a theater this is, but we know from ancient ruins that theaters were outdoor amphitheaters. So we don't know what exactly this was about, whether they were going to be tortured in front of everyone, whether they were going to be given to wild animals. After all, this was part of the Roman Empire, even though it was the Greek world. And when Paul finds out that they've taken his friends, he wants to go in too, but he's advised not to go because, after all, they don't want Paul exposed to this danger, because it's bad enough these other two guys are in there, but they don't want to lose their leader, who was Paul. And it says this mob was so confused, everybody was saying different things, that some people didn't even know why they were there. So, like, what are we doing here? Why are we all whipped up? And so there's this confusion within the mob. So the Jews who live in the city, they're not really opposed to this. I mean, obviously, they're not going to make idols and they're not going to worship Diana, but they also don't like Paul, who was, until recently, a Pharisee, now preaching the gospel of Yeshua, Jesus as Messiah. So they weren't really, they were in no way sympathetic to the believers. So they put this guy, Alexander, out to talk. But when the people find out he's a Jew, they don't want him to talk. Because after all, the Jews don't buy their statues, and the Jews don't buy their images of the temple, and the Jews don't buy any of the Diana souvenirs either. Now, this might be the Alexander that Paul mentions when he writes to Timothy. He mentions him in 1 Timothy, and he mentions him in 2 Timothy. In 1 Timothy, it's chapter 1, verse 20. In 2 Timothy, it's 4:14. And he says, Alexander caused me much damage. And then he says he's turning him over to Satan. Whew. That's pretty intense. He's turning him over to Satan. And then everybody cries out again for 2 hours. Great is Diana of the Ephesians. For 2 hours. And it kind of reminds me of one of my favorite radio people, Hank Hanegraaff, who always says, what people do for a lie, we won't do for the truth. These guys will cry out for 2 hours, the great is Diana of the Ephesians, and we're scared to talk about Jesus when we go to the grocery store. A big difference. So this might be that Alexander, and it might not. For 2 hours, great is Diana. So then this guy who's a city official says, oh, wait a minute. We all know that Ephesus is the guardian of Diana, that you guys are very important to the goddess. We're the city that has her temple. She's the patroness of the city. She's going to protect the city. And they said, well, we all know that this image of Diana came down from the sky from Zeus. Zeus was Jupiter. Zeus and Jupiter are the same, the head god, the chief guy. So we all believe that Zeus actually sent down this image of Diana, Artemis. So don't worry. We all know this to be a fact. So don't worry, and don't do anything rash against these people. So isn't this interesting? So what's the application to today? You know, today in our time, we have opposition or outright hatred of the gospel and those who proclaim it. All you have to do is watch the media for a day, and you'll hear so much stuff about fundamentalist right-wing Christians and Christians with their narrow-minded hate speech and can't pray anywhere and can't pray at the football game and can't, you know, just stay in your churches and shut up. There's hatred, intense, against people that are proclaiming the gospel, just like Demetrius and his fellow Smiths, because this is against their interest. It's against their moral interest. You know, these people don't want others to be influenced by Judeo-Christian morality, by Christian thought. They want people to go along with the progressive, in quotes, agenda. They want people to live in the sin that the world is living in now, because they're so enlightened that that's where their power lies. And Christian ideas are foreign to them. So they demean our beliefs. They don't like what we stand for, because these progressive things are enshrined as dogmas and doctrines. Abortion and same-sex marriage and climate change and family issues and population control and tolerance. And you have tolerance of every religion except Christianity. And these things have basically become gods and goddesses that are made by human hands. Made by human hands, even to the point where they violate the natural law, let alone spiritual law. They violate the natural law. These are gods that have been made. They're not self-existent. They're not supported by natural law. They're not supported by Judeo-Christian spirituality. But they're declared to be truth, just like the guys who made the images of Diana. And so they form angry mobs to go against believers. They form angry mobs to destroy churches, to destroy any proclamation of the gospel, just like they did at Ephesus. And they say, we have these beliefs because now we are enlightened. And this is human enlightenment, you know, what Augustine called the city of man, what was going on in Babel. And we say these things are true. And oh, I know the music's been playing. Oh, so that's Acts 19 with a fast application at the end. So I hope you've had an awesome Lord's Day, and I hope you're with us next week. Have an awesome week. God himself.